At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This podcast was brought to you by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we're talking about green spells in CEDH, the mono green ones, the best ones, and how powerful they are in the format.
But before we do, if you want to help support us directly and get awesome extra perks, make sure you check out our Patreon down in the description below. That link in the description below.
Green, I feel like right now recently has offered the least to CDH overall. I think most people at this point would say green is the weakest color in our format.
I would agree. Did you notice that even in last week's Thunder Junction set review, we didn't talk about any mono green cards?
And I think, honestly, I think that's like fine. Green was like the top dog in Commander as a whole for a long time. Maybe not as much in CDH. It certainly used to be stronger than it is now after red and white has gotten a lot of goodies and green hasn't. But I think that's okay. Colors can ebb and flow. It was top dog. It can be weakest for now. Green still does offer a lot to CDH. It's not nothing.
It really does. Just because it hasn't been getting as many tools as other colors have been, that doesn't mean that it still doesn't give you things that you really want in CEDH.
Yeah.
It gives you mana primarily, and then the second thing that I think it primarily gives you are creature tutors, especially like creature tutors that have the creature come into play immediately without having to cast them again.
I would say, honestly, that's probably the biggest thing that it brings. The mana is for sure what green is known for, but in CEDH, mana dorks are not the best form of mana.
Like, that's true. They used to be good when like Thrasios Timna was like the king of the format, but in more recent years, and especially as Orcish Bowmaster has been seeing more play, you don't see them so much anymore.
Yeah, so although that is still something that you can add in, like a Birds of Paradise, we'll talk about those things, but the green tutors are really what's best. And to be honest, the cards that we're not going to be talking about today, like multicolored green spells is another thing that green offers to CDH as a color pie. Things like Abrupt Decay, those are very powerful effects, but we're not going to be talking about them today because we're just talking about green spells.
Exactly. We'll talk about them next week, yeah. Well, do you want to just dive right in then?
Let's get into it.
All right, let's start off with Sylvan Library. So Sylvan Library is one in a green for an enchantment that says at the beginning of your draw step, you may draw 2 additional cards. If you do, choose 2 cards in your hand drawn this turn. For each of those cards, pay 4 life or put that card back on top of your library.
Sylvan Library was once a powerhouse. I really think it was one of the stronger card advantage engines we had. Just the ability to draw 2 extra turns in a game of Commander where your life total just does not matter as much was a great rate. It really was incredible. Nowadays, it's kind of strange, but that's just not the case. There are a lot of 2 and 3 and 1 mana even cards like Esper Sentinel that can on average draw you around 2 or more cards per turn cycle. Sylvan Library makes you wait a decent amount for them, and it's just not quite as good as it once was. We've been getting more card advantage engines.
Yeah, and I think that what you said, the waiting aspect, is really what made the other card advantage engine shine over this, because Esper, Rhystic, Mystic, they all get you a card the second that they're in play and the second that some other opponent has something on the stack, whereas you have to wait to potentially lose the game before you get the opportunity to pay 8 life to see more cards.
Yeah, definitely. Whenever a player does X, you gain cards is such a better template for CDH because it allows you to potentially have interaction. If someone casts a spell, you draw something else right then to see if it can interact with what they're doing. Whereas, like you said, the Sylvan Library, you have to wait. It's still a fine card. I think in 2-color green decks and 1-color, especially in monocolor green, I still think it's a playable card. But once we're getting to 3 colors and once we have access to some of the better card advantage, like blue and white, I really have been cutting Sylvan Library
a lot. That's the thing. Like, I would only play this in my green decks now if my Commander doesn't give me card advantage in the command zone. Like, if I just really need to find another way to see more cards. The paying life thing seems fine when you have 40 life, but people attack you, like, immediately. Like, 4 life is equal to 1 card. That's a lot of life compared to, like, a Necropotence and stuff like that. And if you don't pay the life, you're just going to put the cards back. So if you don't have, like, a fetch land or another way to shuffle them away, you're just going to keep seeing the same cards that you don't want. So you're almost, like, forced to be paying 8 life on your upkeep to draw 2 more cards. There are so many better rates in the format than that.
What do you want to rate this? I still think it's playable. I think, what did we say, like 3 was our in some decks, right?
Yeah, if so
it's
a 3? I guess, should we go over the whole scale
they
again?
They know it by now, whatever. Okay. 5's good, 1's bad. That's it.
Yeah, so a 3 would be playable in like multiple different decks, I would say. So I do think Sylvan Library is still going to get a 3, but the power level of it alone, like I feel like could also bring it down to a 2.5 just from where it's sitting right now.
Yeah, I think I kind of want to give it like just under a 3, to be honest, because I don't even think it goes in every 2-color green deck. I think if you're playing blue or if you're playing white or if you're playing black, you probably don't play this. Maybe if you're playing black because... No, I don't even know.
If you're playing black, there's a good chance that you might be playing white and are in Timna in your colors, right?
Yeah, I say there's just too many decks that don't play it. If you're in a Gruul deck, if you're in like green red or something like that, mono green.
It's great for a Tali.
It's probably great in a Tali.
Yeah, nothing else in a Tali cares about your life total besides the One Ring.
Treasonous Ogre?
But people won't attack you just because you have Treasonous Ogre in your deck.
Yeah,
like they won't attack you until they see it, right? And it's the same thing with Sylvan Library, Sue. If you do one or the other, you're okay.
2.8.
All right. I'll succumb. We'll do 2.8. All right. So the next one is actually a 3-card package that we're going to put in one because they're all the same card. It's Mystical Elf. No, it's not. It's
That's the 4th one. It's coming out later. Mystical Elf. Yeah. That seems like when it's like a dartboard. I'm like, what do we name this card? Mystical Elf. All right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Ooh. Shadow Beast. Oh, there
That's
we go.
Something.
Yeah. All right. Elvish Mystic Flinthorn Elf. That one is called that. And Llanowar Elves.
Yeah. 1 mana, green creatures that make a green mana.
They tap to add a green to your mana pool. Yeah. They're 1/1s. They die to Orcish Bowmaster. But like they're what define green mana ramp.
I still think these are good in mono green decks, but I've been pulling them more and more in more color decks, honestly.
Yeah.
I think Kinnan probably still plays and likes this because Kinnan works really well with mana dorks, obviously. But if you're not like specifically working great with the mana dorks, I start shaving them just a little bit, especially these ones in particular.
Yeah, these in particular. If you're not trying to be like in 1 or 2 colors and go big with your mana, I really don't think there's a reason to play these anymore.
Yep. I like some of the multicolor ones, which I don't know if we're going to talk
don't
about.
Don't spoil them because they are on this list.
Avacyn's Pilgrim, like that's a green card. Because to me, Avacyn's Pilgrim is a Selesnya card, but by color, it is a green. So
you know
what we talk about today? Or
we're going to put that one now on next week's list. The other two were on there as well. I had Elves of Deep Shadow and Noble and Ignoble Hierarch too, but you kind of are right. They're only played in multicolor decks.
For a commander perspective, from our perspective, we should kind of look at them by like color identity, not their actual color. Those cards are better because those help you fix your mana.
Yeah.
These cards, not as good.
When I got into CEDH and I was playing First Sliver Food Chain, this was like a staple. These 3 cards were like things that you played and I hated them in the deck because all they did was cast my Food Chain and other mana dorks and like I needed pips that weren't green.
I completely agree. You want your mana to fix your mana as well as add mana. We're in a different age. We have a lot of options right now. So.
Exactly. So these are still powerful. These will still help you get your really good 3 mana spells out on turn 2 that you need. Help you get like a turn 2 Blood Moon and Atali, which is really good. However, again, like we've been saying, these have been outclassed. Are these a 2 yet?
I don't know. I think Sylvan Library is better, right? It's hard to say. They're close. To me, they're close to Sylvan Library.
Now, I'm putting Sylvan Library in my decks first because every deck has options for mana rocks. So I find myself needing card advantage in my 99 first more than I need more mana options.
It's the Orcish Bowmaster thing too. Like Orcish Bowmaster is just so omnipresent and it's so easy to like just cut the dorks in order to help yourself against that card. I've never really seen a card in CDH that impacts building decks so much. And I'm not sure if everyone else is thinking the same thing that we're thinking when we build. I have been seeing less of those dorks recently. I got to assume it's because of Orcish Bowmaster. Yeah, I'm going to give this, I think it's less than Sylvan Library. I think it's still 2.5 though. I still think
that's what I typed.
Yeah, Kinnan is the second best deck in our format and it still plays these cards. So like just on that merit alone, they got to be good. But you have to have a way to really abuse them in more than the ways of just they make a mana, you know? double mana with Kinnan, for example.
Birds of Paradise is our next one. This is a green mana for a 0/1 flying bird that taps to add one mana of any color.
Much better than the ones we just talked about. Birds of Paradise, to me, is still one of the premier choices, and it's so crazy the difference in being able to make one, like, any color versus just green. It makes such a huge difference.
Yeah, this one I will still play in, like, every single green deck, yeah. No matter what. Doesn't matter that Orcish Bowmaster can kill it later. The fact that it does give me my other pips is so fucking important.
To me, Birds of Paradise is a 5. I still put it in just about every green deck. Not every green deck, but like pretty much. So maybe it's like a 4.8 or something. Because a 5, it goes in every deck.
What green decks are you cutting it from?
None that I play currently. I'm
even
not cutting it,
like
actually.
My Jund ad nauseum decks would even play this. Like, they don't like.
Najeela plays it.
They don't typically like the tap mana dorks because of how slow they are. They don't really work well after an ad nauseum, but like, it's still so powerful. The flying sometimes is relevant in some decks.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it is just a 5. I don't know that I'm cutting in any decks particularly.
Yeah.
5.
Yeah, we're going to give it a 5
then.
Lock
it in.
Delighted Halfling is the next one. This is a green mana for a Halfling Citizen 1/2 that taps to add a colorless mana or taps for a mana of any color, but that mana can only spend to be cast on legendary spells, but that spell can't be countered.
Powerful.
This is like the best mana dork in Atali now.
Yes, and that's the best one that's been printed in years.
Definitely.
Yeah, very good.
That ability to cast your commander and make it uncounterable is so good for so many decks. It's so good for Atraxa. Like,
I was just going to say, it's really good for Atraxa. Fuck you, Mana Drain. That's like my worst nightmare card when they counter Atraxa and they have 7 mana. I'm like, sorry, everyone, I gave you the game.
Yo, same thing in Atali, right? I love that we're on the 7 mana.
7 mana food chain, big commanders.
Yeah,
I love
this kick that we're on, right? And Delighted Halfling is just so important, especially for the deck that doesn't run blue interaction to stop Atali from getting countered, right? So Delighted Halfling is another one that I'm still putting in most of the decks because of its 2-butt. You don't have to worry about Orcish Bowmaster as much.
Yep, that's a huge thing. It being 2 toughness is like another main. Well, if it was 1 toughness, I don't think we'd be considering it, but that 2 toughness is huge.
So I think as long as you want your commander in play, I think this card wants to go in your deck. I'm thinking it might be a 4.5.
I think it's a 4.5. It's not quite Birds of Paradise. There are still some decks that I wouldn't put it in, but I would say I do put it in most decks, so I think 4.5. I've been loving it, especially in like Timna 4-color decks, like Timna Tana. I think it's great because it helps you cast your Timna, and oftentimes you don't really need the black or the white mana except for Timna, just the way that your hand is looking out. So being able to cast this with it and make sure that it's uncounterable, like, yes, it's a creature, and most times, really, creatures aren't getting countered, but still, that extra protection is super nice.
Especially in Timna, where, like, it has 2 toughness, you feel okay in certain boards attacking it into players, too. And being able to tap for colorless on its own isn't nothing. Like, Boreal Druid was still seeing play up until this card was printed, so.
Yeah, and I also want to mention that its legendary spell is uncounterable.
It is, so if you have a non-creature as well, or, like, even just, like, Lotho in your deck, too, have to be your commander.
I'm specifically thinking Vivian, the Birthing Pod Vivian in Blood Pod, the
Whoa.
One that you can win the game with. That's a great one because that has been my new win condition. Is it Vivian on the Hunt?
Is it
that
is right? Vivian on the Hunt, yeah.
That's been my new like go-to Demonic Tutor target, or like rather than looking for the Birthing Pod, Vivian just doesn't die to the artifact hate. It can possibly be made uncounterable a lot easier in that deck. It's just been super great. So that interaction, those two specifically, is great.
That's a really good point too. Yeah, Delighted Halfling easily gets a 4.5. Bloom Tender is our next card. This is 1 in a green for an Elf Druid 1/1. You can tap it, and for each color among permanents you control, you add 1 mana of that color.
This is sad.
This is really sad, because if you would have said a year ago, what is this card? I would have said like a 4.5.
When I got into this format, I would say this was easily a 5. It was one of the strongest cards in one of the strongest decks I felt. And Thrasios Timna, it just so easily tapped for 4 mana very frequently. So powerful. But again, Orcish Bowmaster, like investing in 2 mana in a thing that doesn't do anything right now and then could get killed. And it's not just Orcish Bowmaster. There's Mayhem Devils. There's other things, Toxic Delusion, other ways to get rid of small pesky creatures. Orcish Bowmaster is just like the very big cherry on top of that nasty pile of pinging off little things. It can feel very bad to invest 2 mana, which is so much mana, into something that you have to wait and then it might not even do anything. It loses its power.
Yeah, definitely. This was my favorite thing to do with the Seedborn Muse in play. Oh. Like, it would just tap and activate Thrasios on its own. Like, this card would do so much work, and it still does work in decks like Kinnan, so, like, it's still seeing play.
Tyler, cut it.
Oh, did he cut it?
For like a Simic Signet or something. He like, wow. Put, yeah, or something like that. He put in an artifact or something.
I'm going to put in like sad violin music in this part of the podcast.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. It's such a cool card. I have an awesome altar for it too that I got. And then afterwards I got it, I'm like, oh, Orcish Bowmaster just recently got printed. I hope that doesn't change how good Bloomtender is. I'm sure
enough. Look at it now. Yeah. Yeah. It's not in a tally either. Yeah. Yeah. I know like permanents that tap for 2 mana seem like they could be pretty cool, but I don't want it.
Weirdly enough, I kind of rate it like under Mana Dorks, under like the Elvish Mystics right now.
Is it under a 2 at this point? Like, is it bad enough now that we can say it's a 1.5 and like you probably shouldn't just be playing Bloomtender anymore?
I think you need a specific reason to play it. Sometimes it's a combo piece with that enchantment that can untap stuff.
Okay.
You know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, like Penmanzora. And the other one, Freed from the Real.
Yeah.
My follow-up question is that combo any good?
No. Yeah, maybe no. All right, so is it less than a 2 then, you think? Right
I'm
now?
Thinking it might be between a 1.5 and a 1.9 potentially.
I'll give it a 1.7.
All right, let's go. I think go it's a 1.7.
I think there are still a deck or two. Some can index. I think you can still get away with it. At times, it still can be very powerful. I'm not putting a lot of my decks recently, though. I'll tell you that.
Me neither. I'm actively avoiding it. But a card I'm never actively avoiding in my green decks anymore is Veil of Summer.
Woof.
This one green instant says, draw a card if an opponent has cast a blue or black spell this turn. Spells you control can't be countered this turn by any colors.
By any colors.
You and permanents you control gain hexproof from blue and black until end of turn. So this card is like a 1 mana cryptic command.
Yeah, draw a card, counter a spell is a lot of times what this does. The protection is unmatched. If you're in green, to me, this is one of my first picks. This is what I'm going to almost immediately if I'm in green.
It's a green silence as well. It's just what lets you make sure that your spells are resolving so that you can win the game through whatever interaction your opponents have.
Yeah, I completely agree. I like this one a lot. I think it's a 5, easy. I think it's better than Birds of Paradise. I don't think there's, I mean, there might be some decks that would, I don't know. No, I like this card a lot. I don't think it's a cuttable card.
Like, it gets played in blue decks. So, yeah. Like, it's alongside all of your other blue counterspells. Like, it's so important to have in any deck that's going into any CEDH pod, I think.
Yeah, I would say if you are not playing blue, it's mandatory.
Yes.
If you are playing blue, I could be argued. There's a lot of good blue interactions, a lot of shit going on. But if you are not in blue, I think it's a mandatory. You have to put it in.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
5?
It is definitely a 5, though. Yeah. Oh, it's not completely infallible. Like, Mindbreak Trap can still exile it, sure, and still completely ruin your day. However, that's just like one of 99 cards that your opponents could have.
Yeah,
so
it's not perfect. There's certainly things that it doesn't get around. If someone Swords of Plowshares, you're permanent. It's not going to protect against that because it only protects against blue and black things with Hexproof, correct?
Yes, but it does protect against Red Elemental Blast on a spell on the stack.
Yes.
But it does not protect from Red Elemental Blast hitting a permanent on the battlefield.
Great card. Better than Birds of Paradise. Best card we talked about so far. It's 5.
Carpet of Flowers is a green for an enchantment that says at the beginning of each of your main phases, if you haven't added mana with this ability this turn, you may add X mana of any one color, where X is the number of islands target opponent controls. And if you're confused as to why the card doesn't actually say that, it's because there's never been a Carpet of Flowers reprint. Oh, wait a minute. Look at all these reprints for Carpet of Flowers.
Just got reprinted as a secret letter.
Yeah, and in the Doctor Who set.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Wow. It's not 2023 anymore, Cam.
Carpet of Flowers is good still. I think it has dropped in popularity recently. I think a lot of people are starting to cut it the same way they're cutting Sylvan Library. One, because just green overall, you don't really are playing green as much. But two, just when it's bad. And yeah, you don't want too many cards that don't do anything sometimes.
And the inflexibility of your usage of that mana is also a bit of a pain. Like, at least mana dorks you can hold up.
Yeah.
And use on your opponent's turn, but like you kind of feel like you're forced to play spells with this mana right when you have that ability. So it kind of makes you go, oh, maybe I want to attack first and then use it on my second main. It's really strong when on turn one, someone else already has an island, like you're going second and you can go this on your main phase, follow it up with a mana dork on your second man phase with this mana. It is happening a lot less now. I actually really like playing the Battle Bond lands because they specifically get around Carpet of Flowers as well, too, while I still have other lands I can fetch in my deck. So I'm still playing Carpet of Flowers in a lot of decks, though. Maybe it's a three.
I still play it a lot. To me, I think it's just personal experience. This is normally Sol Ring to me. This is normally, I spend one mana, and then every turn it makes two mana. And so when I keep on getting those, like, personal bias results, it's hard for me to, like, agree with everyone on this when they say, like, it's being bad for them. Like, I'm always at a table with multiple, maybe just because we play against Tyler and Kinnan a lot, and there's, like, a decent amount of islands in a two-color deck, or I don't know what the situation is, but it's normally making two mana, sometimes one, oftentimes, I shouldn't say often, occasionally three. Rarely does it make actual zero mana. I don't know. It just doesn't happen a ton. So for me, I kind of rate it pretty high. I think I'm going to give it 3.5.
Okay. That means we're going to average it into a 3.3, I would say. Although, you know what? Let's go up with a 3.5.
Yeah.
That's because I'm finding that even if it makes me one mana a turn, I still kind of like it.
Yeah.
Like, it fixes your mana as well, which I think is really important, especially in multicolor decks that want to play Ranger Captain of Aeos, but are also, like, a little bit stuck on their white mana too, or, like, Grand Abolisher, right? So these, like, more pip-intensive situations you need to get yourself into, I still kind of like Carpet Floor.
Yeah, I love it in Timnatana for that reason, because I'm playing four-color creature decks and a lot of creatures that have weird different pips and, you know, double white and then rack those pips. So, like, Carpet of Flowers being able to help with that is great. And then in Atraxa, I'm trying to get to my 7-mana commander. So any additional mana for a low mana value investment is really what I'm into. So yeah, 3.5. I could be argued to go higher, but we'll stick with a 3.5-ish for now.
Also, I think its stocks went up a little bit after Orcish Bowmaster came out, because I think people were actually going down on it before Bowmaster and just going like, well, why don't you just play like a mana dork that's more flexible? But now that, like, Bowmaster can't kill it, you're feeding Dockside with your mana rocks anyway. So kind of like, who cares about your Carpet of Flowers as well? So I don't know. I think 3.5 is very fair for it.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you're cutting mana dorks, I think it's hard to then also cut Carpet of Flowers. Like,
yeah,
you can't cut all of those stuff, because then all of a sudden, all of your mana rocks are two mana rocks. You know, they're signets and shit like that. And then you're like a turn behind everyone, and that also can't be good either. So I think you have to make the hedge on one or the other. You're going to play around Orcish Bowmaster, you're going to play around No Islands. Like, which one is it going to be? And I'm choosing Carpet of Flowers over mana dorks.
There's always a blue player on the pod. Yeah.
What did we give mana dorks again?
2.5.
Yeah, this is a solid point above them,
Point above them, I think, right now. Yeah. Eternal Witness is 1/2 green for a 2/1 human shaman that when it enters the battlefield, you may return target card from your graveyard to your hand.
Love it. This is another card that does not see a ton of play, but I think in the right decks, I actually really love it.
It's funny because it's seen some of the most play for this kind of effect in this color. Like, it sees more play than Regrowth, which is funny to me because it's a whole green pip more expensive, but the fact that it's on a creature is so much more valuable to the decks that care about this effect.
I totally agree.
Where, like, you can use it in loops with Temur Sabertooth and Dockside, or Emile and Dockside, where you make infinite mana. If you don't have access to your commander, you can loop Lightning Bolt out of your graveyard and kill the table that way. So, like, it does have a lot of really good utility. I still really like it in Kenrith as well, as just, like, another creature I can get back from the graveyard to help me get back, like, interaction from my graveyard too if I need it. So I think it actually has a lot of utility in the format, but you're right, it's not really getting played a lot.
It's also the fact that it's green, it works so well with the green creature tutors, because it makes all of your green creature tutors so much more of a versatile card. If your green creature tutors can now also be a regrowth when they need to be for a little bit more mana sometimes, like, that can be really, really helpful. I love it in Food Chain because I can use the Food Chain mana to get it back if I cast the Food Chain and someone doesn't have anything for the interaction, but they kill the Food Chain with an Abrupt Decay. I can use some mana that I make with the Food Chain to cast Eternal Witness and get the Food Chain back. That's a very specific example, but examples like that where you can use it to re-go through your combo again in the same turn sometimes can be super helpful.
I also like it in that specific instance because it works well with the next card that we'll talk about, because it lets you play, like, Intuition in your Food Chain decks then too, and, like, help you set up so that you'll always find Food Chain with that card.
Yeah, that's true. If you Intuition for Eternal Witness, Regrowth, Noxious Revival, two of those, and then the third thing that you actually want, no matter what, you'll get the thing that you want.
Yeah, so it's really flexible that way. That being said, though, it is still, like, the most expensive version of this effect, even though it is something that is very useful. And again, like you said, it's not getting played everywhere. Is it a 2.5, maybe?
I would give it a little bit more than... is it better than Mana Dorks? I think it's better than Mana Dorks. Better than Land of War Elves, specifically.
Because I don't care if it dies, either. Like, yeah. The fact that it's a 2-1 does not matter at all.
I think it's, like, a 3, but it's mainly a 3 because of green creature tutors. Because it makes your green creature tutors better that it exists.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So I think it's a solid 3, though.
Let's give it a 3, then. That sounds good.
What else do we have around it? Do you have it in order right now?
Carpet of Flowers is a 3.5. Sylvan Library at a 2.8. I think Eternal Witness is better than Sylvan Library.
Which is a weird sentence. The 5 years ago, I would not have thought that.
Have said that, yeah. Right? But in CEDH right now, I think these are very accurate ratings that we have.
Yep.
Noxious Revival is a Phyrexian green mana for an instant that lets you put target card from a graveyard on top of its owner's library.
Yeah, this one is very similar to Eternal Witness. It's got to be better. I cut this card a lot, to be honest, because sometimes it just doesn't fucking do anything. But the fact that sometimes it's decent interaction for graveyard strategies, and then for free mana, you can end step, put something back on top of your library, untap and draw it.
What's the opposite of like Worldly Tutor?
The fact that you don't get it right away. You don't get it right now. The thing, like, you can't just put something from your graveyard into your hand right now. It's a little bit slower in that way, but the free mana makes it a little bit faster in other ways. I think it's better than Eternal Witness. It's so funny, we're talking so highly of Eternal Witness and I'm talking so negatively of this card, but it's just because, like, I know the ceiling is, yeah, it's free. It's free in many ways. So I think it's like a 3.1.
I think it's not going to be as good as Carpet of Flowers, yeah. Because I am cutting this card significantly more now than I ever was.
It's fluff. A lot of times it's air. I don't want cards that, like, don't always do something. I need all my cards to always be on, which I know Carpet of Flowers sometimes is an island, but I find that there's more often islands than there is where this card is relevant.
I think so too. There's a lot more I could say about Noxious Revival, but I don't want to.
The interaction part of it is like its weakest category, and that doesn't come up enough for me. It doesn't end up mattering.
They still get the card that they wanted anyway. Unless it's like a Razaketh or something, like, it never feels amazing to do.
Yeah, and that just doesn't come up very often.
Finale of Devastation is X and 2 green for a sorcery that says search your library and or graveyard.
And or graveyard.
For a creature card with mana value X or less and put it onto the battlefield. If you search your library this way, shuffle, and if X is 10 or more, creatures you control get +X/+X and gain haste until end of turn.
This one does everything you want it to in a tutor. It's everything.
It's an infinite mana outlet. You put infinite mana into it. The thing that you tutored for and the rest of your board gets completely humongous and can take out the table with combat damage. It finds you win conditions. It finds you literally everything that you want to. It finds you Grand Abolisher. You can sneak that card in.
Being able to get anything from your library or graveyard, being able to kind of like another regrowth, another Eternal Witness, being able to get stuff from your graveyard and try again, so powerful. The haste that it gives creatures, if you've made infinite mana, it doesn't matter if your creatures have trample or not, because as long as you have more creatures than blockers, you'll attack with gigantic things and kill all your opponents. Win condition, search your library for consistency, search your graveyard for recursion. It's an easy 5 for me.
I guess maybe this is now why decks don't play regrowth, is because you can just get the creature back with finale instead.
Yeah.
Wow. This is the easiest 5.
Easiest 5.
Is this the best card we've talked about so far?
I don't know that it's better than Veil. I don't think there's like a Turbo Ad Nauseam deck that would play. Maybe they still would. Maybe a Jund deck would still want to find Dockside Extortionist in every way possible. Maybe it is better. It does more. Veil of Summer just protect. All Veil of Summer does is protect for a cheap, good rate. Finale kills opponents, helps you get through the early game, helps you get through the mid game, helps you recover in the late game.
In addition to killing your opponents by finding, like, even Thassa's Oracle, if you want to go that way too.
I think it's better.
All right, great. Invasion of Ikoria is our first battle siege. It also costs X and 2 green. It has 6 battle points. I never learned what that is called. So they're called battle points.
It doesn't say?
Oh, it does. It says its defense is 6.
Okay. It has a defensive 6.
It has a defensive 6. When Invasion of Ikoria enters the battlefield, search your library and or graveyard for a non-human creature card with mana value X or less and put it onto the battlefield. If you search your library this way, shuffle, and it flips over into Zalortha Apex of Ikoria, which is an 8-8 with reach, and for each non-human creature you control, you may have that creature assign its combat damage as though it weren't blocked.
Yeah, this card is incredible. A couple things to note. Can't find a human. You can't find Grand Abolisher. You can't find Dranith Magistrate. This card cannot find those things, so remember that. Second thing, when you flip it over, that's casting a spell. So if you have a Rule of Law, that's the only thing that you're doing that turn. They can counter it. When you flip it, they can counterspell it. They can do something like that. You're casting it when you flip it over.
Oh, yeah. So if there's a Dranith Magistrate in play, you can't cast it.
If it's your opponent's, exactly. Yeah, you can't cast it. So make sure to remember that. The third thing I want to mention is this card is still, besides all that, great. It's so good with Timna because it makes all of your Timna things unblockable. So if the board stalls out, it's a really easy way to, like, very quickly just, like, kill the table. It's fucking enormous. It's going to start doing a lot of damage to players. I like this card a lot. I don't think it's quite Finale of Devastation. It does something very similar, but it doesn't actually win the game, but it's very helpful in a similar situation of, like, if you don't have that infinite mana or a way to get to it, instead, just beat the table down with an 8-8 and make all your stuff basically unblockable and make sure you can guarantee those draws off Timna. I really like this card.
Really, any green deck that wants to see Dockside Extortionist is going to want this card, whether or not it's got an 8-8 on the back of it.
I totally agree. Yeah, oftentimes you're not even going to flip it. It's just because it's an efficient tutor that puts the thing right into play.
Honestly, I think it's a 4.
I think it's as good as Delighted Halfling.
You think it's as good as Delighted Halfling?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit, maybe even better than Delighted Halfling, because what it does is so much more impactful to the game. Delighted Halfling helps you keep chugging along, helps you cast your spells, but this can like help you like really swing the game in your favor.
I guess that's true.
I think it's a 4.6.
I've never seen this flipped over, really? Is the thing.
Yeah. I flip it all the time. I guess it's not against you.
Never. I don't think I've seen this flipped over in a CEDH game. So maybe that's why I'm not putting so much stock in the backside. Like most of the decks that I see this played in, like even in like a Timna Malcolm, they don't care about the backside and it's just the creature tutor side that they really care about. I can give you a 4.5. I'll put it on par with Delighted Halfling. I'll and when it. I put I'll it on it. The bottom of the screen, I'll put it in front of Delighted Halfling too.
Okay, sure. I thought you were going to put it behind it just to be a dick.
It's not even going to appear in the bottom row. I think that very few decks actually do care about the backside, whereas it is the front side that is still good. But I guess that's still like a really good option to have, though. All right, let's talk about Collector Oof. This is a 2/2 Oof. It costs 1 and a green, and it says activated abilities of artifacts can't be activated. This is a day ruiner.
Yeah, this is definitely a day ruiner. I have played this card a lot less recently, though, I'll tell you that.
Really?
Yeah, I have not seen it as much. I have not played it as much.
You know what? That's true. I'm not seeing this much as more either. And that's a little bit surprising with the One Ring being in the format. But yeah. I think people have just decided that they want to play the One
Ring. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like, rather than, like, you have to play Dockside and collect your Oof, and then sometimes your Oof shuts off your Dockside, what if you just played the Dockside and played the One Ring and played all the artifacts? And just, like, artifacts are good and you should play them. It'll help you win more games if you play the good artifacts than trying to stop the good artifacts. It's just more difficult to play defense than offense right now.
Stax also just isn't good in the format right now too, and this is like one of the premier things to be doing in a Stax deck, whereas there's like some other Stax creatures that you can play in more mid-rangey decks, but you want to use like your mana artifacts in those decks, whereas like the Collector Oof decks are like all in on Elvish Mystic and like your mana dork. So I guess also as Orcish Bowmaster has become more popular and there's not as many mana dorks in the format, this card is also seeing less play then too.
Yeah, that's true. Although you would think it should see a little bit more play because everyone is switching from the dorks to more rocks. You would think Collector Oof would be more helpful at slowing down those rocks. But like we said, it's better to play those rocks instead.
And we talk about how you do want 2 toughness on your creatures, but it is also easy for Orcish Bowmaster to ping off your 2 toughness
that's
creatures
true.
Too.
Yeah.
Just by like waiting for a trigger to go on the stack and then flashing it in. Like you can easily take out Collector Oof. So I do think it's really good, but it's one of these cards that you play and then the table just gets slowed down to the point until someone removes it and then wins the game, and that's all it does.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you are playing green based stacks, Collector Oof is an auto include for sure.
Yeah,
I don't think green based stacks are great right now, which is why our opinion on this card is tainted. I still think it's a powerful card, and I think if you can make it work, it can be really good. It can really dominate a table, shut everything off, but you have to make sure that you still have advantage. You have to make sure that you are still getting more mana every turn, that you have a way to capitalize on your opponents getting slowed down, because otherwise you're just going to give someone the game when they end step Cyclonic Rift to your hand or something. I still think it's like a 3.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
It's still a strong card, don't get me wrong, but just in this meta, the best decks aren't playing this card.
Yeah, exactly.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Now, Manglehorn is a card that's actually seen more play than Collector Oof right now, which is so funny to me, but it makes a lot of sense. This is 2 and a green for a beast 2/2 that destroys an artifact on its enter the battlefield trigger, and artifacts your opponent's control enter the battlefield tapped.
This is great. This is really closer to the direction of where we want to be going recently, because this doesn't shut off you. It allows your Dockside Extortionist to still have untapped artifacts that come into play, and it allows your Dockside to be even better, in fact, because when your opponents play their Dockside because they just got to get it out of the way so that next turn they can crack their treasures, well, now they have 5 treasures in play that they cannot sacrifice, so your Dockside will make even more, and yours don't come in untapped. Manglehorn is just great. It's exactly where I want this type of like the new wave style of stacks to go, which is interaction when it enters and then the ability to slow your opponents down without slowing you down. That's everything that I want a stacks piece.
I've even loved it on my turn one on the play, even with no artifact to destroy.
Oh, yeah.
Like when you can go Manic Crypt, Forest, and then just cast this and the whole table groans.
Yeah.
It's so nice to have. I love that.
And definitely if you can like pair that with a turn two Timna or a turn two way to take advantage of that Manglehorn and continue gaining advantage, that's really where this card is going to shine a lot.
Yeah, definitely. So it is weird to think that a more expensive, technically less good collector oof is seeing more play, but the fact that it allows you to still play the One Ring and have that be really good for you, have the One Ring enter tapped for your opponents, the One Ring is already very slow, and slowing it down that dramatically by having it come into play tapped means that your opponent is not getting like any advantage off of it. I'm giving this card a 4 because there's a lot of decks that I'm seeing that are playing this now. Like, it's an Itali, even though like it doesn't progress me ahead. Like, it's kind of like this Blood Moon effect in the deck that is enough to slow my opponents down in my slower hands or in the more mid-rangey pods where I can still take a turn off and feel okay getting a turn back.
For me, I think this is just a little bit worse than Delighted Halfling because I think Delighted Halfling just goes in more decks, whereas Manglehorn only goes in the decks that are trying to be a little bit slower and more interactive. But maybe if you're in your green, arguably you should be doing that. The main reason I say that is because in Atraxa, I'm not playing this Manglehorn, but in both Atraxa and Timna Tana, I'm playing Delighted Halfling in both of those decks.
But you're also playing Dauntless Dismantler in both those decks, I assume, which if you have...
Not in Atraxa.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, I guess that makes sense too. But I feel like if you have the option for Dauntless Dismantler, you don't really need Manglehorn either.
Maybe. Yeah, so I can see that.
Yeah. We have Delighted Halfling at a 4.5. Are you saying this should be
we have Delighted Halfling at a 4.5.
Because it's so fucking good.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So
okay,
do you think that it should be above a 4 or do you think 4 is still good for Manglehorn?
What else do we have at a 4 right now?
Invasion of Ikoria is at a 4.5 as well. Carpet of Flowers is a 3.5. That's the next thing that it would come to.
Yeah, this is better than Carpet.
Yeah, I think it's better than Carpet.
But not by a ton. I don't think it's a ton better than Carpet. That's another one that I play in both Atraxa and Tin and Time.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Huh.
3.6?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good.
We can round to go in the middle, 3.8 if you want, but
we'll give it a 3.8 then. Okay. Yeah, in the middle.
I think it's 3.6 and you think it's a 4, and yeah, we'll go 3.8. Well,
3.8 will be its solid ending.
What it does is a little bit more impactful, maybe?
Yeah, I think so too, yeah. All right. Worldly Tutor is 1 green for an instant that says, search your library for a creature card, reveal it, then shuffle and put it on top.
This is another one that I see people cutting sometimes. In today's day and age, don't do that. I think if you have Thassa's Oracle or Dockside Extortionist or Orcish Bowmaster or Ranger Captain of Eos in your deck, meaning if you're playing any other colors, you should play Worldly Tutor, I think. And then if you're in green, yeah, what do you mean? Play one of the best cards in your colors. Absolutely, you should play Worldly Tutor.
All of your green combos are creature combos. Yeah. You need it to find a Shaya and stuff like that.
Exactly. Especially, yeah, with green creature combos being so powerful. If this can both find mana in Dockside or a combo piece in Emile or a Stax piece, maybe in Drannith Magistrate, if you can be flexible, so good.
Even like a clone, like that's peak, that's peak flexibility right there.
Absolutely.
Like Worldly Tutor, I'm not cutting from any of my green decks. You just gotta time it right. Like you can't do it on your turn one when you have no mana available, right? Like when you obviously need other things besides just some stupid value creature, like, but even then it can go get you Lotho. So if you have like the right mana fixing, like just go get yourself a Lotho. This is still gonna solve all of your problems, especially as they continue to print more and more busted creatures the way that Magic has been going.
Yeah, I completely agree. The stronger the creatures get, the stronger Worldly Tutor gets. This is an easy 5 for me. What's at the top right now? We have Veil of Summer and...
Veil of Summer and...
Finale?
Finale is our best one, yeah.
Hmm, is it better than Finale?
It doesn't technically like win you the game on its own.
But it could if it finds you the second half of the combo piece that you need.
So it technically does. I guess all tutors are like that though.
Very cheap rate. The Finale is going to cost you a bunch of mana. For it to be any good.
But this also being a top deck tutor does have those niche applications of getting milled by a brain freeze or a grinding station or something.
And it's slow. You don't get it right away. You have to end step it.
Yeah, also putting you down a card as well, right? So I think this is going to be worse than Finale of Devastation. You know what? I would put this underneath Veil of Summer, too. I'd still give it a 5, but I would say this is our third best card that we're talking about.
Okay, I'll trust you. But yeah, it's hard to say. They're all 5s, so to me, truthfully, they are equal in power level. Yeah. I think I put them in every green deck. But yeah, maybe if I had to, I would take Finale, then Veil, then Worldly Tutor. Yeah, I think I would, if I had to draft them, I would draft them in that order. So,
I think
yeah.
That's how I would draft them, yeah. Eldritch Evolution is a green. Another green. And a generic mana
for a sorcery that says, as an additional cost to cast the spell, sacrifice a creature. You get to search your library for a creature with mana value X or less, where X is 2 plus the sacked creature's mana value. Put that card onto the battlefield, then shuffle and exile Eldritch Evolution.
Don't forget that last part, exiling Eldritch Evolution. That is relevant sometimes. That'll be a big deal. This is a powerful card. I really like this one a lot. Eldritch used to be one of the strongest cards in our format when medium green was like the deck to beat for a while, when you could turn your Timna into a Seedborn Muse in the late game. That was really strong. It still does a lot. Obviously, we don't have to talk about every green creature that exists every time we talk about a green tutor, but the sneaking into Grand Abolisher, that's the big one that I want to talk about, where you're Eldritch Evolutioning for something and maybe the table thinks you're going to go get Dockside Distortionist and you actually just sneak in Grand Abolisher, and now all of a sudden your opponents cannot interact with you whatsoever because you have built something up in your hand first. That's the greatest use case scenario for this card, in my opinion.
I also like it in like 5-mana commander decks that want to use Hallbreaker Horror to go off too. Like, getting something that costs 2 more is such a huge range of things you can get.
We should have said that. That's like one of the biggest things for this card, is if you can turn your commander into something else. Like, if your commander is like a good in turning into a Hallbreaker Horror, the Eldritch Evolution gets much better. In Blood Pod, I do that a lot. I played a lot of 6-drops because late game, if I can turn my shitty Tana into an Inferno Titan, that's really good. It's a powerful card. I think it's another 5. How to rate it against the other 5s gets a little bit tricky, but this card is very, very, very good, I think.
Yeah, I feel like it gets really hard to cut in green decks, honestly, because green decks are going to still play, even nowadays, like Birds of Paradise, and that's the perfect thing to like pot away into some other value creature that you might want, even if you can't win the game. So I definitely agree that it's going to be a 5. I think it's better than Worldly Tutor.
Yeah, that might be true. The fact that sometimes it turns into the Hallbreaker Horror or the Tidespot Tyrant and it can just win the game, all these tutors are like that, but this one in particular, the sneakiness of it, the fact that your opponents sometimes don't know if you're getting something else because it's 2 mana or more or less. So you can sacrifice a 5-drop, and instead of getting the 7-drop, you get a Grand Abolisher. You can do that still. So like the fact that you can be sneaky is what gives this card a lot of boost.
Is this better than Finale of Devastation?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. But is it better than Birds of Paradise?
Yeah.
So this is like the second best card we've talked about then.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that sounds about right.
This is the main thing that green has to offer, in my opinion, is tutoring right into the battlefield and getting anything you want.
Having creatures that can easily get sacked into other things. Yeah.
So yeah, I think these cards are, I would say these 2 are the strongest cards in green we have right now. Certain players would definitely say Veil of Summer is maybe more powerful than we're saying it right now, but for how I look at CDH, these 2 cards seem like the most impactful.
Court of Calling is X and 3 green for an instant that has Convoke and says, search your library for a creature with mana value X or less and put it onto the battlefield and shuffle. I'm getting sick of saying those words.
Same fucking thing. Instant speed and Convoke. That's the main things with this card. Instant speed. That's huge.
That's massive.
If you're in a deck that plays Opposition Agent or Orcish Bowmaster or any of these cards that Dothy Voidwalker, shit like that, like this card becomes exponentially better. And if you're going wide, if this can be close to free, holy hell, is it even more powerful than you could imagine.
Being able to just like instant speed your wins like this is so good. Being able to use the creatures that you're not tapping or attacking with for extra mana to put into this is super helpful as well too. There's like really nifty things you can do with Wall of Roots. So if you're a Tyam player, that's something that you can keep an eye out for. Wall of Roots is 2 mana into your Court of Calling. So,
and the instant speed, like that's the main thing, that if you're playing Sultai Colors and you have the option to search for Thassa's Oracle and with the trigger on the stack, Demonic Consultation on top of somebody else's win after it looks like everyone passed, and you can say, okay, now that everyone probably doesn't have interaction, I'm going to win right on top of you. Can't understate how powerful things like Born Upon the Wind and Emergence Zone are. So for that reason, this one gets powerful too. The issue is that triple green pips. The Convoke helps with that, but if you don't have green creatures in play, this can get really expensive really fast. So I think it's just under the other ones. I still think it's truly a little bit better than maybe the CDH community on the whole would think about this card, but I think this is like a 4.5. I still think this card is really good.
So that would put it on par with Invasion of Ikoria, which I think kind of makes sense.
I think so, yeah. I think the Invasion being 1 green less is significant, but the fact that your creatures can oftentimes pay for 2, 3, 4 mana of this, if you're in a creature deck, you're going to have extra creatures. Just play towards this. Really,
yeah, that's exactly what you want them to be doing anyway. So yeah, I think I really like 4.5 for this one too. Crop Rotation is a green mana for an instant that says, as an additional cost to cast the spell, sacrifice a land, and you search your library for a land, put it onto the battlefield, and then shuffle.
Crop Rot is only as good as the targets that it's getting, right? Yeah. So if you're getting Gaia's Cradle, love it. If you have Gaia's Cradle in your deck, I love having this card.
If you're playing green, you probably do.
Probably are. Yep, exactly. If you have even something as small as Ancient Tomb that kind of turns your crop rotation into a weird Soul Ring, sort of, kind of, I don't know.
It is ramp.
Yeah. The Cavern of Souls, too. That's another one. Finding Cavern of Souls to make your creature uncounterable. That can be really helpful. Card can be really good, but I've seen it get cut a little bit more recently. How do you feel about it?
The only other land that I like with this is Emergence Zone to allow you to actually like do instant speed wins then, which is pretty nice. But even that's still a little bit mana intensive because you still need like another land to tap with Emergence Zone and then go off still. So I'm also liking it a little bit less, but in like my low color green decks that really care about having creatures in play, like I'm not cutting this card from those.
And this is another one that can kind of blow you out if someone has a mental misstep or can counter it. You've already sacked the land.
Oh, it
can
put bad.
Yeah, it can put you a little far behind. Eldritch Evolution also has that, you know, negative quality, but that doesn't feel quite as bad as losing a land in CDH.
Like, sometimes like that's your only land, or that's like one of your only two lands. So I still think Crop Rot is it like a 3.5 or a 4? Four is kind of what I'm thinking in there, because there's still a lot of decks that want it. It's still so good ramp, and if you do have Cradle, like that's just such a huge upside to turn your stupid little forest into like six mana.
Carpet of Flowers is a 3.5.
Carpet of Flowers is a 3.5. Yeah,
I think this is better than Carpet of Flowers. Surely, I think it's close to a 4. Is it a solid 4? Should we just give it a 4?
I think it's fine at a 4. That's better than Manglehorn, right?
Yeah, it's better than Manglehorn.
Yeah.
Let's give it a 4. I think it's still a very powerful card, even though it does get cut a little bit. If you like Born Upon the Wind and you play Emergence Zone, I think you should like Crop Rotation too, and Gaia's Cradle is a nuts card. So.
Yeah, I agree. Seedborn Muse is 3 and 2 green for a Spirit 2/4 that says untap all permanents you control during each other player's untap step. This card defined an entire like 6 months of CEDH in 2020.
Absolutely. When this is the right thing to be doing, this card is so powerful. A couple of things to note, it's not a trigger. It doesn't trigger. So if you have 2 Seedborn Muses, you just still untap your shit just the one time. But who cares? That you don't need more than that. Sometimes having 2 Seedborn Muses is still good because if they kill one, you still have the other one. So that can still be the right play, but it's not a trigger. You can't respond to it or anything like that. Seedborn Muse in specifically Thrasios decks and Kinnan decks, in my opinion, must include Kenrith. I think the best way to build Kenrith is a touch slower. If you're going to go fast, you should play another deck, I think. So if you're going a touch slower with Kenrith, I also think that's a deck that should play Seedborn Muse. Outside of that, I don't think you should play Seedborn Muse, which is kind of a strange spot to be in for CDH. Because in those three decks, holy shit, is it a powerhouse. In every other deck,
that's the thing. Like, if your commander is not being used as, like, a mana outlet, you don't really need this. Because it's not really being helpful to you in any other way. But if you do have a mana sink in the command zone, by golly, this thing's going to be, like, the best thing that you can get.
By golly. I'm thinking, like, a 3-ish.
It's probably a 3,
Somewhere around a 3.
Again, like, 3-4 years ago, I would have said this was a 5. Because all of the green decks were Thrasios decks, and they were all playing Seedborn Muse 100% of the time.
Now, with things like Atraxa and other green decks that just don't care about the untapping part of it, it's just, it doesn't have as much of a home. But it's another card that, like, Kinnan, which is arguably like maybe the second or if not one of the strongest decks in CDH, plays Seedborn Muse. So that alone gives it a reason to be powerful. But still, I think somewhere around a 3 is just, it's a 3.
It also helps you facilitate instant speed wins in those decks too, especially now that Born Upon a Wind is a card. I'm a lot happier to have Seedborn Muse in my Kenrith deck and feel more comfortable knowing that I can take advantage of more windows.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point as well.
All right, so 3/4 Seedborn Muse. Endurance is the next card that we're going to talk about then. This is 1 and 2 green for 3/4 Elemental Incarnation Flash Reach. When it enters the battlefield, up to one target player puts all the cards from their graveyard onto the bottom of their library in a random order, and you can evoke this card by exiling a green card from your hand.
Yeah, Endurance is a powerhouse. Now, a couple things important to note. It's 2 different triggers, which you can respond to in whichever order you want to, which means if you have it enter the battlefield, you can have it target your own library, and then in response to that trigger, you can kill it, so then the Endurance would go to the bottom of the library, and then the Endurance would go then to the bottom of your library. So if you have a way to be drawing through your deck with a Thrasios or something like that, you can then kind of use it to like Time Twister loop and just like loop some cards through again and again. I know in Atraxa, that's a backup line for me with Culling Ritual and Mana mana, rocks, and things like that, I can basically just keep on casting Endurance, killing the Endurance, putting it back under, attracting through my deck, and go infinite that way and kill my opponents with that.
And by kill, you don't mean like targeting it with a spell. You just mean stacking it so that the Evoke trigger goes off and then it dies.
Either or. The Evoke trigger that goes off, you have to sacrifice, pitch a green card from your hand each time, but you can just with your infinite mana just cast the Endurance.
Oh, I guess that's true,
and then
yeah.
With the cards that you are putting back onto the bottom of your library, use those removal spells to kill the Endurance
again. Oh, I guess it's true. Yeah, if you just like use Abrupt Decay, that also just means that you can just keep looping Abrupt Decay too.
Yeah, exactly. Especially with Calling Ritual, because you need to be able to kill your rocks to make a whole bunch of mana, put them under, and then use the Abrupt Decay with the mana that you make to kill the Endurance and have them all go under. So that is obviously all very good, but also the fact that this stops Underworld Breach on a creature spell is very good too.
It stops Thassa's Oracle as well. This is like the only way that green has to stop Thassa's Oracle wins, which is super helpful too. And it also gets around Ranger Captain of Eos as well. Like, it's still a spell you can cast through that, which is one of the main things that they'll forget.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think this card kind of, it has to go both ways for you to put it in your deck. I think a lot of the times you have to be able to use it to be part of your win condition as well as interaction for the table. But if it can do both of those things, I think it's really great. I think if it's just interaction for the table, it's a little bit more questionable. I still think it can be fine, especially if you're in non-blue colors. But once you get to blue, a lot of what it does, like, yes, it stops Thassa's Oracle, so does Counterspell, so does Force of Will. Those things also stop Thassa's Oracle. So, but if you're in non-blue, I think this is a much better include as a piece of interaction.
I am thinking about cutting it in a tally now. Like, okay. It has made for some pretty good interaction, but I also feel like if I could just play a card that helps me get a tally out faster, like, I'd much rather do that than interact.
Yeah, see, it doesn't help you win the game in that deck, which is I kind of like, in Atraxa, it's a win condition, so like, yeah, it's great, absolutely, because if my backup to my win condition is it also interacts, that's awesome. But
even the recent game where I had it in a tally, I don't know if this game aired or we just played it, I had all of the interaction in the world, and even though I was able to stop an Underworld Breach or a Thassa's Oracle, whatever it was with it, I still didn't win that game. So it's not like it actually helped me win. You're exactly right. It just made someone else win the game. So Endurance is still really good. I think it's still going to get like a 3.5 or a 4 is kind of where I want to put it, because again, not every single green deck wants it. You really shouldn't be running it just as a silver bullet.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit worse than Crop Rotation on the whole, although weirdly, I think I play Endurance more than Crop Rotation, just me as a player recently. I'm not positive if that's true. I'd have to double check, to be honest, but I think it's somewhere around like a high 3.8 or somewhere like that, I think I might give it.
I'm definitely playing it not as much as I am playing Crop Rotation. Like, yeah. Crop Rotation, see, I'm playing in most of my green decks now.
I agree. I think Crop Rot's a little bit better, but I still think Endurance can be powerful if it goes both ways. That's when it's at its best. So I think for that reason, 3.8, but in the decks that it's good in, it's like a 4.2. But overall, we'll give it like a 3.8.
Elvish Spirit Guide is our next card.
Hot, hot, hot.
Feeling hot. Hot, hot. Come on, Scryfall. Work with me here. This is 2 and a green for a 2/2 elf spirit that you can exile from your hand to add green mana.
Is this the mean spirit guide? Except for green. Powerful card. I give it a 5. I think it goes in way more decks. I think every green deck should play it, to be honest.
So there's actually a lot of green decks that don't play it.
Fools.
I know, like, Thrasios decks weren't playing it because you want, like, permanent mana options in those decks because you want to be able to keep activating Thrasios.
And I do get that. Individual card quality is something that you want to strive for in mid-range and controlling decks. I totally understand that. I just think in CDH, the speed is so important. Like, we were talking about with Sabine Spirit Guide, it's the same thing. And I think the more I think about that, the more I think just the speed is just worth it. Like, the option to go faster when you need it to, and to sandbag your mana, if you will, so that it doesn't die to the Orcish Bowmaster before you use it, or it doesn't feed the Dockside Extortionist before you need it, and you can just, like, explode from less. Being able to find windows out of places where people didn't think you had a window, it's just so powerful. And, like, yeah, you're not always going to be able to need that green mana specifically, but in the decks that can cast win conditions with green mana, or can cast interaction with green mana, or can, you know, cast multiple different options of things with the green mana, I think it's going to be best in those decks. And I truly think I give it like a 5.
Cast interaction with green mana. There's literally one spell that you're going
to
cast.
It's not a ton. You can pitch it to Endurance or Force of Vigor. That's the green mana.
So for the red podcast, we gave Simeon Spirit Guide a 5, but we also said that Elvish Spirit Guide is worse than Simeon Spirit Guide.
Okay, I'll give it a 4.8.
That's what I was thinking. I think a 4.8 is a really good spot for it because it is not seen play in every single green deck, which is still a good criteria for a 5, but the red decks want that burst of mana so much more than the green decks do.
Yeah, that's probably true.
That I think 4.8 is really good for it. So
lock it
I think
in
let's
a 4.
Give it there. There we go. Okay. Here is one of the channel's favorite cards, Food Chain.
Wins games.
Wins games. This is 200 green for an enchantment that says exile a creature you control to add X mana of any one color where X is 1 plus that exiled creature's mana value. Spend this mana only to cast creature spells. So if you're not familiar with the Food Chain combo, if you have Squee, if you have Eternal Scourge, or if you have Mist Hollow Griffin, you can exile them to Food Chain to make one additional more mana than they cost. And then you can cast them from exile and still have one more mana remaining. And you can continue doing this loop so that you can cast your commander infinitely with this.
More or less. Yeah, billions of times you'll be able to do this, which should be more than enough to win the game. Food Chain wins games. It's been one of our favorite cards since the channel's inception. It's just a cool fucking card. I think the reason why it's cool is because it looks like it should kind of suck, but for some reason, it just like gets the job done a lot of the time. It just turns your extra creatures and shitty things into ways to explode your creatures into the win condition and find it a little bit quicker.
It's especially good now in our two main 7-mana commander decks that have these awesome ETB triggers where you want to exile your commander because it helps pay for your commander again.
Exactly, yeah. It's particularly good in, like you said, in our decks that we're playing now. It's seen a bit of a resurgence. The fact that it works really well with Demonic Consultation and Tainted Pact and Thassa's Oracle, which is other of win conditions in the format, it works well with those things too, because a lot of the times with the Food Chain loop, you're getting rid of your whole library either by drawing it or exiling it with the tally, and then just casting the Thassa's Oracle will just win you the game. So the overlap with the other most powerful thing to do in the format is really good. It's a six.
It's gonna be our first fucking six.
It's one of my favorite cards. It's just, I think it's just a super cool, powerful card.
I think so too. And it's so funny that it's still thriving in the Rhystic Study meta too, which is so funny to me.
Study is certainly its biggest weak point, because if they're drawing a card every time you cast a spell, they're going to draw their whole
deck. They're going to find Besage or something.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. But there's ways to get around it. There's ways to get rid of the Rhystic Study.
Silence is a card.
Yeah, Grand Abolisher, get that in first, and draw your whole deck. You don't have enough mana for Besage or Ottawa right now, so it doesn't matter. Have your
Who
whole
gives
deck.
A shit? Yeah, yes. Food Chain's an easy six.
Exactly. So yeah, we're giving it a six. It's the first. It's the best card in the format. No, it's not, but it's our favorite.
Yes,
it's my
it
favorite.
Teemer Sabertooth is 2/2 green for a 4/3 cat. For 1 and a green, you can return another creature you control to its owner's hand, and if you do, Teemer Sabertooth gains indestructible until end of turn.
Indestructible, who cares? It bounces Dockside, and as long as Dockside makes 5 treasures, you can cast a Dockside for 2 of them, make 5, and then use 2 of it to bounce a Dockside, so it brings you down to 3, and then use 2 of them again to cast a Dockside with 1 in there, and then no matter what, as long as you have 5, it costs you 2 to play the Dockside, 2 to bounce a Dockside, and you'll make infinite mana?
Technically, the reason why this is the worst of the Dockside creature combos is because not only does it tie for needing the most amount of treasures for Dockside to make, but it also has the highest CMC of all of the other creatures that combo with Dockside in this way too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think Emile is almost strictly better just because it allows you to do it for much less mana.
Now, you don't have to recast the Dockside either, so like that also opens up a lot of other doors for you to like not trigger Rhystic Study while you're going through this loop too.
It's still a powerful card. It's still a combo piece with Dockside. If not for Dockside, it would be nothing.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't play this.
There's no reason
without
to play this
Dockside
card.
Yeah, and if
good.
Your commander can't use infinite mana, don't
also
play
don't
this,
this
combo. Yeah,
exactly. 3-card combos are not good. 2-card combos are good. So if you can't win the game with infinite mana, I would not play this card.
Yeah, so I'm giving it a 2 because it only sees play with Dockside Extortionist.
I think that's fair. And it's not the best thing to do with Dockside either. So why would you not be doing the best thing a lot of times?
Yeah, and it's only just because like Atali doesn't play white. That's the only reason. Yeah,
yeah,
so
exactly.
Like, you have to do what you have to do. But like,
okay. It's a 2.
I don't love drawn it, but it does bounce a tally. Like I did,
it's
like a 3 in a tally, but that's about it. Our final card, it's Legolas's Quick Reflexes. This is 1 green for an instant with split fucking second, and it lets you untap a creature, and until end of turn that creature gains hexproof reach, and whenever this creature becomes tapped, it deals damage equal to its power to up to 1 target creature.
Does a lot.
It does a lot. Like, the ceiling for this card is that it's like a 3-for-1, right?
Yes.
It protects your creature from a removal spell. It has the ability to tap and fight something else.
Yeah, and you can also block something if you're in the combat step.
Exactly.
So if you're in the combat step and someone's attacking you and they try to kill your tapped creature and you go in response, Legolas' Quick Reflexes, untap it. It has hexproof. Go to blocks. Block your thing, tap it. Destroy some other thing. Now, that'll never happen because specifically your creature has to be able to tap. It has to either tap for mana or it has to attack in order to do that fighting ability. You can't just decide to tap your creature.
Now, there's things that you can do. Like, if you're playing Springleaf Drum, that's sure. really cool.
Yep, absolutely.
But that means you have to be playing Springleaf Drum.
The stars have to align quite perfectly for you to get max value, but you don't even have to get max value because just giving your creature hexproof, that's good.
That's
split
great,
second,
yeah.
give your creature hexproof, that's good. And the fact that if you can maybe do something else, okay, sure, yeah, whatever, but split second, give your creature hexproof, that's good. So if you're in a deck that specifically is relying on creature-based combo where just one instance of giving it protection would save your combo, I like this card a lot. Outside of that, not so much. I don't think there's a ton of homes for it, but in the right homes, this card's super powerful.
I'm not playing it in a Tali yet, but maybe I should be.
I think that you don't care if they kill a Tali because you want to cast it again. I
it's
think
more
that maybe
for
that's
like
why.
If I'm trying to go off with like dual caster like as
yeah,
like my
I could
actual
see that.
Finisher, but at that point, like I don't know. I feel like I don't need it in a Tali, but I feel like there are a lot of decks that do want this card. Like Paco and Halden, like any deck that's really trying to protect its commander so that its commander can do its thing over the course of multiple turns, I think really wants this.
I think specifically like Silvala or Yisan. Commanders that have a tap ability that you want, because this untaps them, right?
It does,
so like specifically commanders that you want to tap to gain some type of advantage, that's where this card is going to shine the most. When it's hexproof, yes, but also when you're gaining an extra like action out of your commander, that's when this card is, I think, going to be at its best.
Yeah, especially when like in response to a removal spell, when people think they're stopping you and then you go, I'm going double than what you thought now.
So in the right deck, super strong. In most decks, not super strong. That kind of gives us like an awkward place of like where to rate it. This is worse than Elvish Mystics, right?
Bloom Tender is a 1.7.
I think it's better than Bloom Tender.
I think it's better than Bloom Tender too. I kind of want to give it a 2 right now.
I think
just
I want a 2.
It just doesn't really have a great home outside of mono green, and mono green's probably the worst color combination you could be in CEDH.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Sorry, mono green
players.
Sorry,
mono green players
I think that might
who
be
are
true.
Watching this short, because that's where this made it.
Gotcha.
But yeah, like I kind of think Legolas's Quick Reflexes is just going to be a 2 until it finds a more solid home, until we are like officially moving away from Thassa's Oracle Underworld Breach win conditions and focusing more on creature only win conditions, then I think Quick Reflexes is going to be a little bit more something that we want. But until then, this card is like sadly the best green tool we've gotten since Veil of Summer.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think for now it's a 2 with the potential of it could be a 4 in 6 months. If there is something good that's printed that makes really good use of this, I think this card has the potential to be insane. Split seconds, nutso. But right now, the way the meta looks, I'm giving it a 2. Maybe 2.2.
2.2. All right, let's give it a 2.2. They're going to be solidly above Team or Saber Tooth.
All right.
There. Cool. There we go.
There's so many fucking green spells.
That's the thing. There are so many green spells.
Like, we didn't talk about Utopia Sprawl. That's a fine card. We didn't talk about Noose Constrictor. We didn't talk about any Gitrog cards, Cameron. We didn't talk about Runic Armor Sword. Remember, that one was really good. Root Maze. I used to love Root Maze. A lot of specific combo pieces for specific... Protean Hulk. We didn't talk about Protean Hulk.
Oh, wow.
I'm not saying we should. Summoner's Pack. We didn't talk about that one either. I'm saying those cards suck now. It's just...
Who plays Protean Hulk anymore?
If you want us to talk about green card, we didn't talk about it because it's X. That's all.
Yeah, that's why. That's typically how it goes.
Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Justin Heck, Cucho, Alex, Sean in the Ice, Mark Cirillo, SoCal Acura, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Raspberries, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Goat09, Kwaja A. Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Big thank you to Dragon Shield for supporting the show. Make sure you use our affiliate link down below and code playtowin5 for 5% off your order.
Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you so much for watching.
See you next time.
Jacob Bowler, Luca Bressel, Big Mike, Nicholas Balder, Reactive, Tyler Watson, Brian Barrington, Zachary Colson, Tyler H, X Tyler the Tree X, Mulcraft, Driving Crooner, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hobo Ghost, Mitchell Shepard, Justin, Man Solo, Pedro, Jacob Depp, Michael Ballou, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
We're listening. A little green. A little green.
It's not easy being green.
Are you feeling it now, Mr. Krabs?
That ability to cast your commander and make it uncounterable, I can't talk today.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal.
all that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.